All right, welcome to another deep dive. This time, we're going to be tackling the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
But not just like skimming the surface.
Right.
We're going deep, deep, deep with insights from this this academic lecture on Old Testament literature.
Okay.
Which, you know, really gets into ancient treaties, the whole concept of Torah,
mm-hmm.
and those iconic commandments themselves.
Right.
So this deep dive is for anyone who wants to go kind of beyond those familiar phrases.
Okay, yeah.
And really grasp the historical, cultural, even literary forces that shaped these foundational laws.
For sure.
So get ready.
Yeah.
To see the Ten Commandments in a whole new light.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Me too.
It's fascinating how much depth there is
yeah.
to these seemingly simple statements.
Right.
And the lecture does a fantastic job
yeah.
of connecting the dots for us.
One of the first things that jumped out at me, at least, was the connection between the covenant at Sinai,
okay,
you know, described in Exodus,
oh, yeah.
ancient Hittite treaties.
Okay.
Can you unpack that a bit for us?
Yeah, sure.
Because ancient treaties don't exactly scream
yeah.
Ten Commandments.
No, not at first glance.
At first glance.
Yeah.
Right. Well, think of it this way.
Okay.
God was communicating profound truths
yeah.
to the Israelites,
mm-hmm.
but he did it using a structure they would have recognized,
okay.
a format that was familiar.
Okay.
And understandable to them.
Okay.
Hittite treaties, for example,
yeah.
had these key elements.
Okay.
A preamble,
uh-huh.
a historical prologue.
Okay.
Specific stipulations.
Yeah.
Witnesses.
Wow.
And even curses and blessings.
Wow.
For those who upheld or violated the agreement.
So God was meeting the Israelites where they were.
Exactly.
Using a framework they already understood
yeah.
to deliver these, like, life-altering instructions.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
And the lecture points out some really cool parallels.
Oh, yeah.
For instance, the preamble in those Hittite treaties
yeah. is mirrored in the simple but powerful phrase.
Okay.
I am the Lord your God.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the Ten Commandments.
Right.
It sets the stage,
yeah.
establishing God's authority and the basis for the covenant relationship.
Then there's that historical prologue.
Yes.
Which you don't always find
right.
in other types of ancient treaties.
Right.
What's the significance of that?
That's a fantastic question.
Okay.
The historical prologue typically recounted
okay.
the good deeds of the overlord.
Right.
And in the Ten Commandments, it's reflected
okay.
in that reminder of God's incredible act of deliverance.
Yeah.
I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery.
Powerful.
It's a powerful reminder of who God is.
Right.
And what he has done for his people.
It's like setting the foundation for
yeah.
the relationship before laying out the
yeah.
expectation.
Exactly.
And that brings us to another point that caught my attention.
Okay.
The comparison to Assyrian treaties. Now, those were
totally.
Different beasts altogether.
Yes, Assyrian treaties
yeah.
came from a much later period and had a very different tone.
Okay.
Remember, the Assyrians were known for their ruthlessness.
Right.
They didn't have a long list of good deeds to brag about.
Right.
So their treaties typically lacked
okay.
that historical prologue altogether.
That's such a striking difference.
It is.
And it makes you think, right?
It does.
Okay.
This distinction is significant because it suggests that the Pentateuch,
mm-hmm.
which includes the Ten Commandments,
right.
could have been written much earlier than some scholars believe.
Oh, wow.
It challenges the idea that the Israelites simply borrowed ideas
okay.
from the later, more brutal Assyrian culture.
Okay, so we've got these ancient treaties
yeah.
as a framework.
Mm-hmm.
But what about the word Korah itself?
Right.
It's often translated as law.
Yeah.
But I get the sense that it's so much more than a set of rules.
You're absolutely right. Think of Torah as God's personal instruction manual
yeah.
for living a life of meaning and purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about following rules.
Right.
It's about understanding God's heart.
Okay.
And aligning your life with his will.
Mm.
The word itself comes from a Hebrew verb
oh.
meaning to teach.
Oh.
So it's more about guidance and instruction than just a list of thou shalts and thou shalt nots.
Torah as a guidebook,
mm-hmm.
that's a really helpful way
yeah.
to think about it. And
yeah.
the lecture dives even deeper
yes.
into the types of laws
yes.
within Torah.
Yes. Okay. It talks about apodictic and casuistic laws,
okay.
which might sound a bit technical, but they're actually pretty easy to grasp.
Okay.
Think of apodictic laws as the biggies.
Okay.
Absolute commands like don't murder or
yes.
don't steal.
Right.
They're straightforward and universal.
Those are the ones that tend to stick with
exactly. you. Exactly. They're etched in our collective memory. Then you've got casuistic laws,
okay,
which are more like if this then that scenarios.
Okay.
They deal with specific situations and outline consequences
right.
for certain actions.
Okay.
It's less about overarching moral principles.
Okay.
And more about maintaining order and justice within society.
So it's like a legal framework.
Precisely.
That takes into account different circumstances.
Yes.
And provides specific guidelines for how to handle them.
Precisely.
Okay.
And what's fascinating is that the Ten Commandments primarily fall under those apodictic laws.
Okay.
Those absolute unwavering commands.
Oh, interesting.
They come straight from God's authority.
Yeah.
And there's no room for interpretation or negotiation.
Which speaks to the weightiness.
It does.
Of these commandments, right?
Yes.
They're not just suggestions.
Exactly.
They're the foundational principles.
Yes.
Upon which a life aligned with God's will is built.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And it's this understanding of Torah. It's different categories.
Okay.
And the authority behind those apodictic laws, that sets the stage for a deeper dive into the Ten Commandments themselves.
It's like we've laid the groundwork.
Exactly.
And now we're ready to explore the nuances of each commandment.
Yes.
And how they fit into this bigger picture.
Exactly. Right. And the lecture offers some truly eye-opening insights.
Yeah.
Especially when we consider the historical and cultural context in which these commandments were given.
I can't wait to unpack that further.
Yeah.
Starting with those first two commandments.
Okay.
Which can be pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah.
When you consider where the Israelites were coming from.
Right.
They were fresh out of Egypt.
Yes.
A culture steeped in polytheism.
Yes.
The worship of many gods.
So many gods.
Right. Mm-hmm. So those first two commandments were a complete worldview shift.
Radical.
No more bowing down to idols representing the
sun,
the moon or the Nile River.
Yeah.
It was a call to radical allegiance.
Yes.
To the one true God.
It's a huge shift, especially when you consider the sheer pervasiveness of idolatry in the ancient world.
It's everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
These two commandments weren't just about religious observance.
Right.
They were about reshaping an entire understanding of reality.
And that brings up another point that often causes some head scratching.
Okay.
The concept of God as a jealous God.
Right.
It's not exactly a warm and fuzzy image.
It's not.
Right, is it?
No.
Okay.
But it's important to understand this concept within the context of a covenant relationship.
Okay.
Similar to a marriage.
Okay.
God's jealousy stems from a deep love for his people.
Yeah.
And a desire for their undivided loyalty.
Yeah.
It's not about pettiness or insecurity.
Right.
It's about protecting a sacred bond that is meant to be exclusive and life-giving.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Placing it within that framework
of
a covenant relationship.
Yeah.
It's about fidelity.
Yeah.
About cherishing that bond above all else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, moving on to the third commandment.
Okay.
It's often phrased as, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain.
Right.
But the lecture offered a more literal translation.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. The lecturer phrased it as,
okay,
you shall not lift up the name of the Lord your God to emptiness.
To emptiness.
And that opens up some really fascinating interpretations on a basic level.
Yep.
It refers to oaths taken carelessly.
Okay.
Or disrespectfully.
Right. So like,
think of it like swearing on something sacred and not meaning it.
But it goes deeper than that.
But it goes deeper than that.
I can see where this is going.
Yes.
It's about a deeper level of reverence, isn't
it? Yes. The lecture connects this commandment to a profound respect for God's name, a respect that is deeply embedded in Jewish tradition.
Okay.
For example, Orthodox Jews are extremely careful about how they use and even pronounce God's name. They see it as something sacred and powerful.
Yeah.
Not to be trivialized or tossed around lightly.
Which definitely makes you think twice.
It does.
About how casually we use the word God in everyday conversation. Yeah. Doesn't it?
Yes.
It's a call to mindfulness.
It is. It.
To recognizing the weight and power that God's name carries.
Absolutely.
It's not just about avoiding profanity.
Right.
It's about cultivating a heart attitude.
Yes.
Of reverence and awe towards God.
Exactly.
And that brings us to the fourth commandment.
Okay.
Which is often seen as a bit of an enigma.
Yes.
The Sabbath.
The Sabbath, right?
Ah, yes, the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
A commandment that often sparks debate.
It does.
And diverse interpretations.
For sure.
The lecture just touched on it briefly,
right,
acknowledging that it's a topic worthy of its own deep dive.
Right. It's a whole other.
Right. We could do a whole deep dive on that.
Yeah.
But I'm curious, what were some of the key takeaways?
Sure.
What makes the Sabbath so significant?
Well, the lecture highlighted the two main reasons for observing the Sabbath,
okay,
creation and redemption.
Okay.
The first reason ties back to Genesis.
Okay.
God rested on the seventh day after creating the world.
Right.
And we are called to follow that pattern to incorporate rest into the rhythm of our lives.
It's about recognizing the sacredness of rest.
Yes.
Not just as a physical necessity, but as a spiritual discipline, a way to align ourselves with God's own rhythm of creation and rest.
Precisely.
And the second reason for observing the Sabbath, as emphasized in Deuteronomy, is rooted in the Israelites' experience of slavery in Egypt.
Yeah.
Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day.
That's right.
It's a celebration of freedom, a tangible reminder that we are no longer slaves to the demands of this world.
Exactly.
Freedom and rest woven together in this beautiful tapestry of remembrance and renewal.
Yes.
It's not just about what we do on the Sabbath, but about what it represents.
Yes.
Freedom from oppression and the restoration of our souls through rest.
Beautifully said.
And from this foundation of recognizing God, respecting his name, and embracing the rhythm of rest.
Yes.
We move into the commandments that focus on our relationships with others.
Yes.
Beginning with the often complex commandment to honor your parents.
Yes. The fifth commandment.
The fifth commandment. Honor your father and your mother so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you.
That's a big one.
This one can be tricky.
It can be.
Especially if you've had difficult relationships with your parents.
Yeah, for sure.
But the lecture pointed out that the Hebrew word for honor goes beyond just showing respect.
Yes.
It implies providing for your parents.
Especially in their old age.
Especially in their old age. It's a multifaceted concept.
It is.
That speaks to the interconnectedness of families.
Yes.
And the responsibility we have to care for those who have cared for us.
Right.
And remember, this commandment was given in a cultural context.
Right.
Where families were incredibly interdependent.
Absolutely.
Caring for aging parents wasn't just a moral obligation.
Right.
It was crucial for their survival.
It was a matter of life and death.
Wow.
Woven into the very fabric of society.
And even if our relationships with our parents are strained, we can still find ways to honor them through practical care and support.
Yeah.
It's about recognizing the role they've played in our lives.
Right.
And responding with compassion and generosity, even amidst the complexities of family dynamics.
That's a beautiful way to frame it.
Yeah.
It's about seeking understanding, forgiveness,
and
finding ways to honor the bond.
Yeah.
Even when it's been frayed by the challenges of life.
It's a journey of grace.
It is.
For sure. And speaking of weighty matters.
Okay.
The sixth commandment is one that strikes at the very core of human existence.
Right.
Thou shalt not murder.
Yes.
The lecture emphasized the specific Hebrew word used here.
Okay.
Which distinguishes murder from other forms of killing, such as war or capital punishment.
Right. It's a very specific word.
This distinction is crucial.
Yes.
The commandment isn't about prohibiting all forms of killing.
Correct.
It's about protecting the sanctity of innocent human life. It recognizes the inherent value of each individual created in God's image.
It speaks to the inherent dignity of every human being and the profound responsibility we have to protect and preserve life.
It's a powerful statement about the sacredness of human existence.
Yes.
And from the protection of life, we move to the protection of another fundamental human bond.
Okay.
Marriage.
Yes.
The seventh commandment.
Okay.
Thou shalt not commit adultery. Speaks to the sanctity of the marriage covenant.
Yes.
And the devastating consequences of betrayal.
Yes. It's interesting how even something that seems so personal.
Yeah.
Like adultery.
Yeah.
can have these larger implications for the community.
Totally.
It's about more than just breaking a rule. It's about violating a sacred covenant.
Yeah.
A betrayal of trust that ripples outward.
Yes.
Affecting not just the individuals involved.
Yeah.
But the very fabric of society.
That's a profound insight.
It is.
It highlights how these commandments.
Yeah.
Even those that seem focused on individual actions.
Yeah. Right.
Are deeply interconnected.
They are.
With the well-being of the community as a whole.
Yes. Absolutely.
Like a web.
Yeah.
Each strand connected to the others.
Yeah.
Supporting the overall structure.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the eighth commandment.
Okay.
Which, on the surface, seems pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Thou shalt not steal.
Thou shalt not steal. Right?
But the lecture delves a bit deeper into the nuances of this commandment. Right.
The eighth commandment tackles stealing.
Okay.
But it's fascinating how the lecture connects this.
Okay.
To a deeper respect for people's hard work.
Okay.
And the principle of fairness in society.
Yeah.
It's not just about taking something that doesn't belong to you.
Right.
It's about recognizing the value of honest labor.
Okay.
And the importance of upholding justice.
Right.
In our dealings with others.
It's about creating a society.
Yes.
Where people can trust each other.
Mm-hmm.
Where their efforts are valued and protected.
Yeah.
And where everyone has the opportunity to thrive.
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a spot-on observation.
Yeah.
The Eighth Commandment is about far more than just protecting personal property.
Right.
It's about creating a just and equitable society
mm-hmm.
where everyone can flourish.
That's great.
And that brings us to the Ninth Commandment.
Okay.
Which focuses on truthfulness and integrity.
Okay.
Thou shalt not bear false witness against your neighbor.
It's about honesty.
Yes.
About speaking truth.
Yes.
And about protecting the integrity of the legal system.
That's right.
But the lecture also suggests that it's about truthfulness in general, right?
You're exactly right.
That lying in any form is condemned throughout Scripture.
It is. It is.
It's about cultivating a commitment to truth in all areas of our lives.
Yes.
Recognizing that lies, even small ones, erode trust and damage relationships.
Absolutely.
It's about creating a culture of honesty and integrity.
Yes.
Where words are valued
mm-hmm.
and truth is upheld.
It's a foundation for healthy relationships.
Okay.
Both with God
yeah.
and with each other.
And finally, we arrive at the 10th and final commandment.
Right.
Which in many ways is the most insidious.
Okay.
Thou shalt not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife. Or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor.
Right.
Covetousness gets at the root of so many other sins.
It doesn't.
Doesn't it?
It's the breeding ground for envy, greed, theft, and even violence.
Wow.
It is.
Like, it's a heart issue.
Covetousness is a heart issue.
Yeah.
A deep-seated desire for something that doesn't belong to us.
Yeah.
It's about discontentment, about constantly comparing ourselves to others and wanting what they have.
And as you said, it can be the root of so many other destructive behaviors.
Exactly.
It's a subtle but powerful force.
It is.
Whispering discontentment into our ears.
Yeah.
Urging us to grasp for more.
Yes.
Even at the expense of others.
Exactly.
I think that's something we all struggle with.
I think so, too.
Even today.
Especially today.
That constant bombardment of images and messages.
Yes.
That tell us we need more.
Right. More and more.
That we'll be happy.
Yeah.
When we have what they have.
Exactly.
It's a recipe for unhappiness.
It is.
And a breeding ground for covetousness.
It's a trap.
Yeah.
That's easy to fall into.
Yeah.
Especially in our consumer-driven culture.
Right.
But the 10th commandment calls us to something different.
Okay.
Something countercultural. It calls us to cultivate contentment,
mm-hmm.
to be grateful for what we have,
okay.
and to find our true worth and identity
yeah.
in something far greater than material possessions
wow.
or social status.
It's a call to freedom.
It is.
To break free from the chains of comparison and envy.
Absolutely.
And to find true satisfaction
yes.
in our relationship with God.
Yes.
And the abundance we already possess.
Beautifully said.
And it's remarkable
yeah.
how centuries later,
right.
Jesus summarized all of these commandments.
He did.
With his teaching on the greatest commandment.
Yeah.
You're talking about the command to love God with all your heart.
Yes.
Soul and mind.
Yes.
And to love your neighbor as yourself.
That's right.
It's incredible how he distilled those 613 laws.
I know, it's amazing.
Into two core principles.
It's a stroke of brilliance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just so.
It highlights the interconnectedness of the commandments.
Right.
showing us that they're not just a random assortment of do's and don'ts,
right,
but a cohesive whole.
Yeah.
Flowing from those two fundamental principles of love.
They all point back to loving God.
Yeah.
And loving others.
Mm-hmm.
Creating a life that reflects his character and brings harmony to our relationships.
Yes.
And to the world around us.
It's about cultivating a heart of love.
Right.
A love that permeates every aspect of our lives.
Yeah.
From our worship to our relationships to our everyday actions.
It's about aligning ourselves with God's heart.
Yes.
And allowing his love to flow through us.
Yes.
Transforming us and the world around us.
That's a beautiful way to put it.
Thank you.
And it reminds us that the Ten Commandments aren't just ancient rules.
Right.
They're timeless principles
that
are just as relevant today.
Absolutely.
As they were thousands of years ago.
They offer guidance for living a life.
They do.
That is both meaningful and fulfilling.
Yes.
A life marked by love, mm-hmm. integrity,
yes.
and true freedom.
Yes. Speaking of timeless principles and intriguing insights,
okay.
the lecture also addressed a common misconception about the two tablets of stone that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
What exactly was that misconception?
Okay, remind me, refresh my memory.
It's often assumed that the two tablets were split with five commandments on each, as if one tablet was for God stuff and the other for people stuff.
Right, 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 right.
But the lecturer pointed out that this is unlikely.
So it wasn't like Moses came down the mountain with one tablet for relating to God and another for relating to people.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's more likely that both tablets contained all 10 commandments, essentially serving as two identical copies.
Oh, wow.
Of a legally binding contract.
Okay.
One copy was kept in the sanctuary.
Okay.
The Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
Symbolizing God's commitment to the covenant.
Uh-huh.
And the other was for the people.
Okay.
A constant reminder of their obligations.
That makes so much more sense.
It does.
It emphasizes the mutuality of the covenant, the binding agreement between God and his people.
Yes.
It's not just a one-way street.
Right, yeah.
God is bound to his promises.
Yes.
Just as much as the people are bound to their obedience.
It's a beautiful picture of partnership.
Yeah.
A covenant relationship where both parties are fully invested and committed to fulfilling their part.
This deep dive has been eye-opening.
It has, hasn't. It has, hasn't it?
We've been exploring how even those commandments that seem deeply personal,
right,
like honoring parents or avoiding adultery, actually ripple out to impact the whole community.
It's true.
It's like each commandment is a thread in a tapestry.
Yeah.
When one thread is pulled, the whole pattern shifts.
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
The lecture actually gave us a helpful framework for understanding how these commandments work together.
Right. It broke Torah down into three categories.
Okay.
Moral, ethical,
okay.
civil, social,
okay.
and ritual, ceremonial,
okay.
to help us see their different functions.
Okay.
It's like looking at a house.
Okay.
You've got the foundation,
yeah.
the walls and roof that make it livable, and then the decorations and personal touches that make it a home.
I love that analogy.
Yeah.
So starting with the foundation,
okay.
what would fall under more ethical Torah?
Those are those big picture heart level commands that shape our understanding of right and wrong.
Okay.
They deal with our relationship with God. Oh. Like the first four commandments about worshiping him alone and keeping the Sabbath holy.
Okay.
But they also extend to our interactions with others.
Right.
Like those commandments against murder, adultery, and stealing.
Right.
They're the bedrock principles that guide us toward a life of integrity and love.
So it's about those fundamental principles
right.
that shape our character and our understanding of what it means to live a good life.
Yeah.
A life that reflects God's character.
Exactly.
And then you've got civil social Torah.
Right.
Which is like the framework that holds society together.
Yeah.
These are the laws that deal with things like property rights.
Oh, yeah.
Fair treatment of those who are vulnerable and how justice is administered.
Right. Think of it as the blueprint
right.
for creating a society that is just and equitable.
So it's about establishing order and fairness.
Yes.
Creating a system that protects the rights and well-being of all members of the community.
Exactly.
It's about ensuring that everyone has a fair shot at a good life.
Yes.
A life free from oppression and injustice.
Precisely.
And what's really interesting is that the line between moral and civil Torah can get a bit blurry.
It can.
For example, the commandment against stealing
yes.
is both a moral imperative.
Right.
We know it's wrong to take what doesn't belong to us.
Yeah.
and a societal necessity.
Right. You can't have a functioning society.
Right.
If everyone's running around taking from each other.
That makes total sense.
It does.
It's like a two-sided coin.
Yeah.
Each side reflecting a different aspect of the same principle.
It's about personal integrity and social harmony.
Now, what about that third category?
Okay.
Ritual, ceremonial Torah. This one seems a bit more removed from our modern context.
It does.
But I'm sure there's still wisdom to be gleaned from it.
Oh, absolutely.
So what's the deal with that?
Well, ritual ceremonial Torah might seem a bit foreign to us today.
Okay.
But it played a vital role in the lives of the Israelites.
Okay.
This category includes all those instructions
okay.
about sacrifices, festivals, dietary laws,
yeah.
and even rules about cleanliness and purity.
Okay.
Think of it as the way God's people were to worship him,
okay.
to demonstrate their devotion, and to live in right relationship with him.
So all those detailed instructions
yes.
about how to build the tabernacle,
yes.
what kind of sacrifices to offer, mm. and what foods were considered clean or unclean,
yes.
that's all ritual Torah.
Yes.
Okay.
And it's important to remember that for the Israelites, these rituals weren't just empty actions or mindless rule following.
Right.
They were meant to be tangible expressions yeah. of their relationship with God.
They were physically enacting their faith.
Yes.
Expressing their devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And seeking to align their lives with God's will.
Exactly.
It's like they were embodying their faith.
Yes.
Through these rituals.
Mm.
Making it a lived experience.
Yes.
Rather than just an abstract concept.
Exactly.
And I think there's something profound in that.
There is.
Even for us today.
Yeah.
We may not have the same rituals.
Right.
But the principle of embodying our faith,
yes,
of making it a tangible part of our lives,
yes,
is still relevant.
I completely agree. And that's one of the key insights.
Okay.
The lecture highlighted
okay.
ritual Torah reminds us
okay.
that all of life is lived in God's presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about following rules in a temple or during a special ceremony.
Right.
It's about recognizing that God is present in every aspect of our lives.
That's a powerful concept.
It is.
It's about bringing that awareness of God's presence into the everyday.
Yes.
The mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Even the messy parts of life.
Exactly.
It's about infusing our lives with a sense of the sacred.
Yes.
Recognizing that nothing is outside the realm of God's concern and care.
It is. Think about those laws in Leviticus.
Okay.
That deal with seemingly mundane things
okay.
like mildew, mold,
yeah,
and even bodily emissions.
Okay, yeah.
They seem a bit odd to us today.
Sure.
But they were emphasizing that no aspect of life is outside of God's concern.
Wow.
He cares about the details,
yeah.
about the things that might seem insignificant to us.
It's about recognizing that God is involved in the nitty-gritty of life.
Yes.
That nothing is too small or too insignificant for his attention.
That's right.
It's a beautiful reminder that we are never alone,
mm-hmm.
that God is with us in the everyday moments,
yes.
the triumphs, the struggles, and everything in between.
Exactly.
And that's reflected in Jewish tradition even today.
It is.
There are blessings for almost everything.
Everything.
Even for going to the bathroom.
I know. It's amazing.
It's a beautiful expression of gratitude.
Yes.
Acknowledging that God is the giver of all good things.
Mm-hmm.
Even those we might take for granted.
It's about cultivating a heart of gratitude.
Right.
Seeing God's hand in every aspect of our lives mm-hmm. and responding with thankfulness.
It's about shifting our focus from what we lack.
Yes.
To the abundance we already possess.
Mm-hmm.
Recognizing that every breath, every moment is a gift.
And speaking of gifts.
Okay.
The lecture shared a story.
Okay.
That I think perfectly illustrates
okay.
the enduring relevance of the Ten Commandments,
okay.
even in our seemingly secular world.
Oh, I love a good story.
Yay!
Okay, so
what was it about?
It was about the importance of memorizing the Ten Commandments.
Okay.
The lecturer's husband attended a secular college.
Okay.
And in his English literature class.
Okay.
Guess what they were required to memorize?
The Ten Commandments.
The Ten Commandments.
Oh, really? Yes.
I'm intrigued.
The professor, who was not religious, recognized that the Ten Commandments are foundational,
yeah.
not just for religious belief,
right.
but for Western civilization as a whole.
Wow.
He saw them as articulating universal principles of morality and justice
mm-hmm.
that have shaped laws, literature, and culture for centuries.
Wow.
He wanted his students to understand those principles,
yeah.
to see how they've influenced our understanding of right and wrong,
okay.
of how society functions,
right.
and how individuals should interact with each other.
That's incredible.
It it is.
It shows that even in a secular context,
yes,
the wisdom and relevance of these ancient texts
right.
are still recognized and valued.
Exactly.
But then the lecturer shared another story,
yeah.
this time about her own experience
yeah.
at a large church.
Okay.
The senior minister decided to ask his staff
okay.
if they could recite the Ten Commandments from memory.
Okay.
And you know what?
What?
Not a single one of them could do it.
Wow.
That's surprising.
That is surprising.
And a little bit ironic.
It is a little ironic.
Considering they were church leaders.
Yeah.
What do you think that says about how we engage with these foundational texts today?
It's a funny story, but it also highlights a sobering reality.
Yeah.
We often take these foundational texts for granted.
Right.
Assuming we know them well enough without actually taking the time to internalize them.
Right.
We might have a vague sense of what they say.
Yeah.
But we haven't really wrestled with them, memorized them.
Right.
Or allowed them to shape our thinking and our living.
It's like we've inherited this incredible treasure trove of wisdom.
We have.
But we're so busy with the distractions of life
right.
that we haven't really stopped to appreciate its value
yeah.
or to allow it to truly transform us.
That's a great way to put it.
And I think this deep dive is a perfect opportunity to rediscover that treasure.
Yes.
To brush off the dust.
Yes.
And to see how these ancient words can speak to us in fresh and powerful ways.
I couldn't agree more.
This conversation has definitely inspired me to brush up on my commandments.
Yeah, me too.
To delve deeper into their meaning and to allow them to shape my life in a more intentional way.
Me too. And it's not about rote memorization.
Right.
It's about engaging with these texts on a heart level,
yeah.
allowing them to become a part of who we are and how we live.
It's about letting them seep into our souls.
Yes.
Guiding our thoughts, our actions,
yeah.
and our relationships.
Absolutely. Speaking of which,
okay.
before we move on,
yeah.
I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier
okay.
about the two tablets.
Sure.
You said the lecture debunked a common misconception about them.
Right.
Can you remind us what that misconception was?
Right. It's often assumed
yeah. Yeah.
that the two tablets were split.
Yes.
With five commandments on each.
Yeah.
As if one was for God stuff.
Right.
And the other for people stuff.
Right.
But the lecture pointed out
mm-hmm.
that this is unlikely.
It's unlikely.
So it wasn't like Moses came down from the mountain
no.
with one tablet for relating to God
right.
and another for relating to people.
Exactly.
Okay.
It's more likely that both tablets contained all Ten Commandments.
Wow.
Essentially serving as two identical copies
okay.
of a legally binding contract.
Okay.
One copy was kept in the sanctuary.
Right.
The Ark of the Covenant, symbolizing God's commitment to the covenant.
Okay.
And the other was for the people.
Okay.
A constant reminder of their obligation.
That makes so much more sense.
It does.
It emphasizes the mutuality of the covenant.
Yes.
The yeah. binding agreement between God and his people.
Yes.
It's not just a one-way street.
That's right.
God is bound to his promises.
Yes.
Just as much as the people are bound to their obedience.
It's a beautiful picture of partnership.
Yeah.
A covenant relationship where both parties are fully invested and committed to fulfilling their part.
And it's a reminder that God doesn't just give commands.
Right.
He also makes promises. He enters into a covenant relationship with us.
He does.
Committing himself to us.
Yes.
Just as he calls us to commit ourselves to him.
It's a relationship built on mutual trust, love, and commitment.
And that's a beautiful foundation for exploring the deeper implications of these commandments, isn't it?
It is.
It sets the stage for understanding how these commandments are not just about rules and regulations.
Right.
They're about shaping our hearts,
yes.
our relationships,
yeah. Yeah.
and our very understanding of who God is.
Yes.
And who we are called to be.
And that, I think, is the perfect place to pause for a moment.
Okay.
We've covered so much ground.
We have.
Exploring the categories of Torah,
mm-hmm.
delving into those captivating stories from the lecture,
right.
and even debunking some common misconceptions.
It's been a lot.
It has.
But there's still so much to uncover.
I agree.
Especially when we start to connect
yes.
these ancient commandments to our modern lives.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm excited to get into that.
Me too.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the Ten Commandments. Before the break, we were talking about how the two tablets of the covenant might not have been split five and five after all.
It really shifts our perspective, doesn't it?
It does.
To think that both tablets contained all ten,
yeah.
like two copies of the same contract,
yeah.
it emphasizes the idea that this covenant wasn't just about God handing down rules,
really?
but about a mutual agreement.
Right.
A partnership between God and his people.
It makes you realize that God was as invested in this relationship as he expected the Israelites to be.
Exactly. And that level of commitment from God adds a whole other layer of meaning to the commandments themselves.
Yeah.
They become less about restrictions
and
more about guidelines for how to live in harmony with God, with each other, and with ourselves.
It's like a roadmap for a life of purpose and fulfillment.
Yes.
A life that aligns with God's heart and reflects his character in the world.
Beautifully said.
And that brings us back to Jesus' summary of the law.
Yes.
As loving God and loving your neighbor.
It's amazing.
It's incredible how he distilled all those commandments.
I know.
Down to those two core principles.
He did. It's like he cut through all the complexities and got to the heart of the matter.
I know. It's just so.
He did. And it shows us that these commandments are not just a random collection of rules.
Right.
But a unified whole.
Right.
All flowing from those two fundamental principles of love.
It's like a tree with deep roots.
Yeah, exactly.
Love for God and love for neighbor.
Yes.
Everything else branches out from there.
Exactly.
So when we think about the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
It's not just about avoiding certain actions.
Right.
But about cultivating a heart posture.
Yes.
Of love for God and for others.
Absolutely.
It's about allowing that love to shape our thoughts, our words, and our deeds.
Exactly. And that love should permeate every aspect of our lives.
Right.
From our personal relationships to our work to even how we use language. Remember that discussion about the third commandment?
Yeah.
It challenged us to think about the weight of our words.
It did.
Especially when we're speaking about the divine.
It's about treating God's name with reverence and respect.
Yes.
Recognizing the power and holiness that it represents.
Absolutely.
It's about approaching God with humility and awe, acknowledging his sovereignty and majesty.
And that sense of reverence isn't just limited to our words. It should extend to every aspect of our relationship with God.
Right.
Influencing how we approach him in prayer.
Yeah.
How we worship him.
Yeah.
And how we seek to live our lives in a way that honors him.
It's about aligning our hearts and minds with his will.
Yes.
Surrendering to his guidance and allowing his love to transform us from the inside out.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
And it's this transformation, this ongoing process of becoming more like Christ that truly allows us to live out the spirit of a law.
Right.
Not just the letter of it.
Not just the letter.
It's not about legalism or rule following.
Right.
But about allowing God's love to shape us into people he created us to be.
People who reflect his love.
Yes.
His justice and his mercy in the world.
People who are committed to building a society that is marked by truth, integrity, and compassion.
Exactly. And that's the beauty of the Ten Commandments.
It is.
They're not just about personal piety.
Right.
They're about creating a just and flourishing society where everyone can thrive.
Exactly.
They're about building a world
where
relationships are honored. Where life is protected.
Yes.
And where truth and justice prevail.
It's about creating a world that reflects God's heart.
Yeah.
A world where his love is tangible, his justice is evident, and his peace reigns.
That's a beautiful vision. And it's one that we can all contribute to
one
step at a time.
Yeah.
By allowing these ancient commandments to shape our hearts and our lives.
I couldn't agree more.
This deep dive has truly been a journey of discovery.
It has.
We've uncovered layers of history, cultural context, and theological depth.
So much depth.
And I feel like I have a much richer understanding of these timeless principles.
Me too. It's amazing how these ancient texts can still speak to us so powerfully today.
I know.
Offering guidance and wisdom for navigating the complexities of life and building a better world.
I think our listeners probably feel the same way.
I hope so.
This deep dive has given us all a lot to chew on, hasn't it?
It certainly has.
We've gone from ancient treaties to the nuances of Hebrew.
Yeah.
From the categories of Torah to the heart of Jesus' teaching.
So much ground.
It's been a whirlwind tour through centuries of wisdom.
It has.
And I hope it's sparked a desire in our listeners to continue exploring.
Yes.
To keep digging deeper into these timeless truths.
I hope so, too. And before we wrap up, I want to leave everyone with a final thought-provoking question. We've unpacked a lot about the historical and cultural context of the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
But what do they mean for you today?
Right.
Are they just rules from a bygone era?
Yeah.
Or do they still have the power to shape our lives and our world for the better?
That's a great question.
It is.
It's one that each of us needs to wrestle with personally.
Yeah.
To consider how these ancient principles intersect with our modern lives.
Yes.
And how we can allow them to guide us.
Right.
Toward a life of purpose, meaning, and love.
It's about taking these truths.
Yeah.
And making them our own.
Yeah.
Allowing them to shape our character, our relationships, and our contribution to the world.
And that's what this deep dive has been all about.
It has. It's been about rediscovering the beauty, the wisdom, and the enduring relevance of these ancient commandments.
Right.
And allowing them to inspire us to live lives that are worthy of the God who gave them to us.
So as you go about your day,
Keep
those commandments in mind. Think about how they apply to your life, your relationships, and your place in the world.
Yeah.
And maybe, just maybe, you'll discover that these ancient words still have the power to transform us.
Yes.
And to lead us toward a more just,
absolutely,
compassionate, and beautiful world.
That's a beautiful thought to end on.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey of discovery.
It's been fun.
Until next time.